Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hello and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR, 8:55 AM, 3CR Digital Radio and 3cr.org.au. My name's Mark, and today we're chatting to singer-songwriter Kalida Sari about her upcoming album, Songs for the Invisible, and navigating chronic illness, ADHD, and autism. Welcome to the show, Kalida. Thank you for joining us at Brainwaves. I guess, first of all, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners and share a bit about yourself?
Well, I'm Kalida Sari, and I am folk slash country slash pop singer-songwriter from Borloo or Perth. And I write music about my personal experiences battling invisible disabilities, chronic illnesses, including a lot of mental health issues as well. So, the only reason I'm really releasing it is to try and just bridge the isolation divide that a lot of us with those challenges have, and just try and make some of those people feel just a little less lonely and a bit more seen. So yeah, that's my vision for the moment.
You do describe yourself or your songwriting and you've described your songwriting and recording music as a form of activism. Could you talk a little bit about what you mean by that and how your music has become a vehicle for activism?
I think any kind of artistic expression, if it's to do with some kind of political or any kind of issue that could be in the realm of activism, I think just reflecting your own experiences can be just a purer form of activism. Once, you release those songs or perform them and people start hearing them, you're going to start, getting people looking a bit differently at life. So even though I'm not trying to shove my experiences down people's throats or anything, I think that, any kind of art that reflects really important issues that need to be talked about and need to be improved on in our society, even if it's just hearing the songs and not actually being an active campaigner in the advocacy world, which I realized quite quickly that I couldn't be anyway, so I can only do it through my songs. So I'm hoping that with the subject matter that I'm talking about in the music and the hence the different podcasts and radio programs that I'm actually on, they're mainly to do with disability and mental health. And so I'm hoping that in itself will be, reaching out to the right people. Hopefully people who aren't in those shoes will be also listening. You've got to hope. and that will hopefully spread a little bit more awareness about those issues.
You currently live in Perth, as you mentioned, but in the early 2000s, you moved to Melbourne to act, write and perform music. What was that chapter of your life like?
It was amazing. Probably the best time of my life, I've got to say. But it was also terrifying and absolutely exhausting because I was trying to do so many things, wear so many hats. And it turned out that with my kind of nervous system, you can't really try and do three different kinds of jobs as well as a day job. But I absolutely loved Melbourne, and I never wanted to live anywhere else. I found that place incredibly inspiring and full of just such incredibly inspiring people doing really inspiring things. And just there's just so much access to art and culture and music. It was just like, it just blew my head apart all the time that I was living there. I think it's probably still the same. I think it's aside from the COVID trauma, which I'm kind of glad I missed out on a little bit, not to rub it in or anything, I've still got a lot of friends and family living in Melbourne, and I really didn't envy them having to go through that. I loved living in Melbourne, and it was unfortunate that life kind of had its way of making me kind of come back here, but that's just the way life goes sometimes.
What was Melbourne's music scene like at the time, and how would you describe it to people who weren't there?
I was first really struck by how many different kinds of genres of music were readily available to see live. Because I'd grown up in Perth, where it was all Indian grunge or male bands. That was pretty much it. I was just blown away by it. Particularly the live jazz and stuff like that was just amazing. Unfortunately, I was very poor and very burnt out and working in hospitality as well. So I didn't get out to see a lot of live music or as much as I would have wanted to. I just thought it was just the most amazing kind of hot pot full of like every genre available, and just everyone just really excited about creating art and music instead of like being at one another's throats and being ultra competitive. But that might have been my young 20s kind of naive view of the world. But I kind of, it didn't feel really competitive, which was nice. It was just like, come along if you want. And, you know, it was a great place to live, and, great place to have constant access to live music every day of the week.
Were there any local musicians or bands you particularly enjoyed watching who left a lasting impression on you around that time?
I can't actually remember many of the names. I did mainly save my money up to go and see my friends when they'd tour over in Melbourne. So I saw my friend's Fourth Floor Collapse playing. They supported George, who I was obsessed with back then. And George were doing an East Coast tour at the time. I think it was back in early 2002 or something like that. And another friend, Felicity Groom, she was playing quite a bit back then as well.
During that period, as you mentioned, you were acting, writing music, performing in bands, and working full-time in hospitality. Looking back, you've described that time as leading to autistic burnout. Did you recognize that was what was happening, or was that something you only sort of understood about yourself later down the line?
Oh, yeah. I had no idea what was going on. I thought it was mental health issues and some kind of underlying physical condition, but I didn't have the money all the time to investigate it. And being autistic, I kind of assumed that everyone around me knew what they were doing, and I should have known. So I just kind of kept my head down and kept like trying to do what everyone else was doing and failing epically. Because I was also struggling with mental health issues, I thought it had, you know, something to do with my depression. And it wasn't until I was in my 40s that I got diagnosed with autism and ADHD, and it was just like, oh my God, my whole life has been, you don't want to say wasted, but it's quite frustrating looking back and thinking, oh my God, I struggled so much. And if someone had just reached out and said, hey, have you thought about autism or ADHD, it would have made an absolute world of difference to me. I just kept struggling until my 40s, which was rather unfortunate, because you do get, without the labels or diagnoses, you get reputations for being unreliable, not being social enough, not being reliable enough for work, getting sick all the time, that kind of thing. If I'd known what it was, it would have made a huge amount of difference. Definitely.
Once you realized you were burned out, what helped you regain your strength and energy and mental well-being around that time?
Mainly just withdrawing from social activities. Also just time. And just reducing the amount of demands I had on myself. I got a reputation from friends of not being social enough and piking all the time, which was not nice. I realized pretty quickly that I had to slow down. But again, I didn't know exactly why and exactly which support structures to have in place, because I didn't have the diagnosis or diagnoses. So, I just used to sleep an incredible amount and, eventually just withdrawing a lot from social life and that things like that.
This might be a good opportunity to play your song, I Survived. Before we do, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about what inspired the song?
It's about surviving big upsets and big events in your life that you really, when you're right in the heat of it, you really weren't sure if you're going to survive or get out of it, and it feels endless, you know, those kinds of really hard parts of your life, like divorce or postnatal depression, for example. But I actually had a heart attack and open heart surgery when I was 36. It was from an undiagnosed heart defect. And I had a 4-year-old at the time. Incredibly life-defining at the time, and still quite kind of is. Once I actually got the diagnosis quite a bit later on after that, and got the right medication, and the floodgates to my music opened back up again, that was the first thing that kind of fell out of me, was like, well, what's the biggest thing that's happened to me so far? Like, I survived a heart attack. That's pretty much what the song's about. But I do hope that people can kind of apply it to their own experiences of, you know, surviving the hard stuff that they've gone through.
Mm. All right, we're going to play I Survived by Khalid Asari. You're listening to Brainwaves on 3CR.
Tried to stop beating, it tried its best to stop me breathing. The very core of me betrayed my whole body. I lay there shaking. I questioned what in me was attempting to leave my life so brief. Yet I am still here. Oh, I am still here. My time wasn't set to disappear. Down were all denied. I got back up. I didn't drown. Though I came close, I didn't stay down. I didn't stay down. My chest pierced my heart to end unrest. With a soaring blade they tried to correct what nature had cruelly formed in defect. I caressed death again but stayed with breath. Something keeps pulling me back to the brink of hell and back. Time and time again, I thought this is the end. I survived. Many times they tried to take me down, were all denied. I got back up, I didn't drown.
I'd like to revisit the sort of, I guess, the beginning of your music journey for a moment. So what kind of music was playing around the house while you were growing up?
My dad had an amazing record collection. It was like a whole wall full of records. And he had quite an eclectic, random taste. There was a lot of very experimental jazz, mainly classical music, and but also quite a few folk and country records from like the late 60s, 70s and early 80s. So I learned how to sing basically just singing along to those folk and country records. And I think that that kind of influence has definitely stuck with me. The folk and the country is still definitely, you know, deeply ingrained in my soul.
As you got older and began making your own musical discoveries, which artists resonated with you and why?
I'm still heavily influenced by the some of the folk and country singers that I grew up with. So Joni Mitchell, Joan Baez, and Leonard Cohen. I think my first few songs were pretty much just Leonard Cohen copies, but with a female voice talking about her teenage angst. But as I got older, I got quite heavily into the indie rock and grunge scene. Once I discovered George, that was amazing. I was like, oh my God, a classical singer can sing classically, but with like, yeah, modern music. It blew my mind. So I'd still quite, I definitely cannot sing like Kaye Noonan at all. I did try a few times to write songs like her and failed epically. Now I've in the last maybe 5 years or so, got a bit more into like Americana and alt country stuff, like a lot of American singers like Brandi Carlile and Sarah Giroux. And there's a great Americana band called I'm With Her, three women. And then when I'm feeling like some real country, then Lainey Wilson's always a good one to turn to. Yeah.
Fibromyalgia isn't really discussed as often as autism or ADHD. For listeners who may not be familiar with it, could you explain what fibromyalgia is and how it affects people and some of the ways it's managed or treated?
It's fibromyalgia is different for every single person who has it. It's kind of one of those syndromes that is still like some medical professionals actually don't believe it exists, the really old school ones, because it's kind of it's unexplained pain, and it's normally after some kind of physical trauma and or emotional trauma. So how they define the chronic pain is, I think, like anything after lasting like 6 weeks to 3 months and it's still happening, and they've done all the scans and all the tests and they can't find any other reason, that's normally when they'll tell you it's fibromyalgia. But it does come with some telltale signs that the majority of fibromyalgia sufferers have, like brain fog and like chronic headaches and migraines. So the way that the pain affects most people is it affects your muscle dexterity and strength. So for me, I have sometimes whole days where I can barely use my fingers, and I just have to give up quickly and not push it, and realize it's just not going to be a guitar playing day. I'll just work on something, some other aspect of my music. And it's also one of the lesser known side effects is it can also have the same kind of dexterity and muscle strength effect on the vocal cords. So I've only read a few stories online about it, about people speaking publicly about it. But that's definitely been the case with me. As you can probably hear, I'm quite husky at the moment, and it means that my voice tires a lot quicker. I have to take a lot of breaks, and I'd say for about the last 6 months or so, I've been almost completely unable to sing at all. So once I finished recording the album, it's like my voice just kind of gave up for a while, and I'm working with a speech pathologist to try and rectify that. In terms of treatment, it's really up to the individual how much pain they're in, if it's widespread pain. And it's also got a lot to do with government supports. There is very, very little support in terms of fibromyalgia. The NDIS introduced support for it only about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I think. But they're highly restricted as to who can not only diagnose you and treat you. So even though I've got like about 8 years worth of documentation and doctor's reports, specialist's letters, all that kind of stuff saying fibromyalgia, they'll only accept it if a rheumatologist will diagnose you and treat you. But here in WA, I've been kind of, I want to say something rude, but I can't. I've been restricted from actually getting public rheumatology access because they must be completely overwhelmed, because I had to wait 3.5 years to finally get rejected. But they only deal with people who have autoimmune or definitely autoimmune-based pain and I think it's like inflammation kind of based pain. And because so little research has been done on fibromyalgia, because it's mainly in women, there's still not enough evidence and studies out there to really have proper kind of supports and protocols in place. Unfortunately, it's got a lot of work to do. I think the NDIS definitely needs to review those protocols, because I can't get any help unless I go to private physios and private OTs and private pain specialists. And when you're living on a disability support pension, it's near impossible to pay for. So, yeah, it's I think it's one of, yet again, one of those physical kind of medical issues that is a lot easier if you have money, but if you're poor, you're pretty buggered. So I've found it pretty damn tough, but hopefully things will improve.
Living with a hidden disability can bring its own unique challenges, from with other people's assumptions or skepticism, to navigating the way we view ourselves. What has your experience been like living with a hidden disability?
I still find it very challenging. Even some family members still just don't get it, because I don't look sick and I don't sound sick. And it's incredibly frustrating, because it does make you question yourself too, and the legitimacy of your symptoms, and even things that you've, paid good money to get diagnosed. You're still just like, oh, but is it really that bad? It's quite harmful. I'm really hoping that the increase in awareness and just talking openly about it on shows like this is going to hopefully change a few minds, and hopefully that will have a flow-on effect to gradually work its way into like government policy and, health department policy and things like that. It's what's even more challenging about living with invisible disabilities like autism and ADHD when you're a late diagnosed person is you've had, most of your life living with these things and not knowing what's wrong with you. So when the people around you keep questioning, but why? Why can't you just come out? Like, why do you keep piking? Why can't you work a full-time job? You really do start to question your worth as a person too, which is incredibly harmful. And that's why the majority of people with autism and ADHD have mental health problems as well. Not solely why, but that is a big, cause of it, I think. Just constantly having to advocate for yourself is so, so exhausting, to the point that, like, I actually just don't like leaving the house sometimes because I just can't face having to, drag myself around and pretend to be an able-bodied person because I look like an able-bodied person. And even when I'm swaying in the aisles of the chemist and holding myself up by, the shelving, people still look at me and see an able-bodied person. I could probably spend an entire program talking about that. It's an incredibly difficult thing to go through. And I'm hoping with Disability Pride Month we can kind of include a bit more invisible disability awareness as well, or maybe just come up with our own invisible disability, month as well, because it in itself is really, it's a particular kind of shitty. So I wouldn't wish it on anyone. But any disability is difficult to live with. That goes without saying. But I think it's just the invisible ones are just less understood and less talked about.
People who haven't lived with disability, whether physical or psychological, may not fully understand the isolation that can come with it. How would you describe that experience of isolation, and how does music help bridge that gap between yourself and others who understand those experiences of isolation?
My experience of that isolation was at first really confusing because most of the time I didn't know why I didn't have the capacity to go out into the wider world. Once I had my daughter, I got very bad postnatal depression and anxiety. And having a small baby has its own challenges of isolation. But when you add the mental health aspect to it, it became impossible for me to leave the house for nearly about a year and a half. It's quite hard to explain just the overwhelming anxiety at just the thought of having to get ready to leave the house and then what you're going to, experience when you leave the house, and how's your kid going to behave, and how is your pain going to behave, and are you going to have an anxiety attack, and, all of that kind of stuff, and the steps involved just to get out the door, it just becomes overwhelming. So when you add a physical disability or a psychosocial disability to that, it becomes even harder. Also because of what we were talking about before, that lack of understanding of people just looking at you and taking you for face value and questioning every single aspect of your health, just so you can get some medication from the doctor or from your pharmacy. It's something I at growing up as quite an extrovert and an actor and performer, I never thought I'd ever be in any situation that had anything to do with social isolation at all. But again, with the late diagnosis of ADHD and autism, I just didn't know. I knew I was struggling with depression and had been since the age of 13 years old, and anxiety. So I knew they were there and they were an element to it, but it really didn't feel like the whole picture. And even, you know, with suffering with depression and anxiety, it's again something that people look at you and see an outgoing person who's doing this, you know, performance-based art and things like that. They just don't get it. And they just couldn't wrap their head around that, you know, someone could be really extroverted, work all day and, you know, do like auditions and interviews and then go home and be a mess and not be able to leave the house for 2 days. So, yeah, but again, I mean, it's different for everyone, but it is one of the most heartbreaking parts of having a disability. And I'm hoping that releasing this music will reach people who are in those situations. And I'm really hoping they'll be able to kind of see themselves reflected in those songs and feel seen and heard. That's really the only reason why I'm doing it. So, I mean, initially when it was suggested that I, you know, make an album, I thought, oh my God, you're deluded. Like, who's going to listen to music from someone who hasn't performed for 20 years and is in their 40s? Like, that's ridiculous. But then I thought about when I've been in the most socially isolated, you know, when I was still desperately trying to seek answers. And that also really contributes to, I think, the overwhelm and the mental health aspects of it. When you feel like you're not getting the answers, you're not getting taken seriously by the medical professionals or mental health professionals, your friends around you, your family, that can really isolate you even more because you're isolated within yourself, because you're constantly questioning, oh, well, should I be really looking for an answer? Like, maybe I should just, yeah, snap out of it. Like, they keep telling me, you know, it's a really bad headspace to be in. And I'm hoping that, now that, you know, the music is so readily available online, which is really where a lot of people with disabilities can find their community because of the social isolation. I'm hoping that, yeah, it will make just a tiny difference.
Your new single, Not Today, Satan, was released on the 1st of July, the first day of Disability Pride Month. It's a powerful and defiant song with lyrics including, "Damn you, Satan, for steering my eyes towards your duplicitous disguise. You're always whispering in my ear, playing on my pain and fear." What inspired the song and what were you hoping to express through those lyrics?
That song was written during, it was at the end of a fibromyalgia pain flare, before I'd been diagnosed, so I still didn't even know what it was. I just had incredibly bad chronic pain. I could barely move. I could barely leave the house. And the pain flares were lasting months. And I was on taking, like being prescribed the wrong medications as well. And they were giving me the most horrific withdrawals at the end of these pain flares. So the withdrawals were actually almost as painful as the pain flare itself. And I felt like so trapped by it because I didn't know what was going on. And I was being told by medical professionals, you shouldn't be taking that stuff anyway. And it was, when you're in such bad pain for so long, like it's something that just never leaves. It's just relentless. And I was still getting used to the relentless kind of way that fibromyalgia burdens you with pain. It's because you have to completely change your life and change the way you approach life and how you pace yourself. And reduce your expectations too. Like, there are so many things that you have to grieve for as well that you thought you'd be able to do, that you still think you'd be able to do, but you just keep trying and you just can't. I was trying to kind of encapsulate that kind of that absolute frustration and also that kind of ongoing battle that you have with yourself, where you would sometimes, actually most of the time, turn to almost anything to just get rid of the pain, even if it's just for a few hours. But of course, you know, they're unhealthy coping mechanisms, but that drive or that battle is always there. And it feels like something that I'm always battling. And I know other people with chronic pain and fibromyalgia have exactly the same things. And unfortunately, some of us do like end up being addicted or not addicted, but our bodies become dependent on certain substances. Even if it's been prescribed by a doctor, you think it's going to be okay, but it's not. And in the end, you know, you have to choose the hard path, because the hard path is the long-term health goal path, which is incredibly difficult. And you have to keep talking to yourself every day, even sometimes when the pain is really hard or really bad, even minute to minute. It's just like, no, you're doing the right thing. Not today, Satan. You're not going to get me. Not today, Satan. And I jokingly started saying that because my husband would say, oh, not today, Satan. And so it kind of became like a broken record in our house. And yeah, once I kept saying it over and over again, I was like, oh my God, this is a song. And it just kind of fell out of me. Also, once I'd embraced the countryside of myself. I think it's one of the lesser talked about parts of chronic health, chronic pain, is you do have to really battle not falling into really unhealthy coping mechanisms. And I think it needs to be talked about more openly, because addiction is a really, really big part of chronic pain. Unfortunately, again, it's there's not very much public support for those kinds of things. There's a few bits and pieces here and there, but really needs to be looked at and better supported. Unfortunately, the pharmaceutical industry is still quite far behind. That's pretty much it. Long story short, it's about battling chronic pain and really wanting to get rid of it.
Today, Satan, not today. Though you make it damn hard to look the other way, I will stay here in the fray, ignore your temptations to stray. Your promises are intoxicating but all hollow. This pain, it draws me in until I'm completely lost within. Then the only way out seems to be I'm a test disguise. You were always whispering in my ear, playing on my pain and fear, preying on the vulnerable, so disdainful. Stop tempting me with falsities. Pain-free life is fantasy. You don't offer help. You want to own me.
After so many interruptions caused by burnout, health challenges, and finally understanding your diagnosis, how does it feel to be writing, recording, and performing music again?
It's amazing. Amazing and exhausting. because I stopped performing when I was 26. Because again, I was trying to do too many things, and once I started doing postgrad studies at uni, I couldn't keep down a part time job and you know keep rehearsing and performing for music. So I put down my guitar, and at the time I thought maybe I'll probably get back to it once I finish my studies and I start working professionally. But undiagnosed autism and ADHD, and I could barely handle working full time at all. So it was a huge break. But I honestly thought I'd lost the ability basically to write and perform music. It was like piece of me had kind of broken and disappeared or something. So to finally come back to it has been beautiful and amazing. And I wasn't that excited at first, but it was mainly the people closest to me, like my oldest friends and best friends and family. They were just like, oh, this is fantastic. And they were very encouraging. But it is, after having so long off and so many incredibly big life experiences, to have the floodgates open up again, it's been exhausting. It's like this torrent of material of like 20 years of or 18 years of songs and lyrics are just coming out of me at like breakneck speed, and I can't control it. So sometimes it's normally very, very noisy in my head, and I find it very hard to focus on anything else other than the music, which is a bit annoying for my daughter and my husband. I'm hoping that it's going to prove fruitful in some kind of, you know, way, hopefully reaching some people and hopefully opening up conversations about invisible disabilities chronic pain and things like that.
And finally, where can our listeners go to hear more of your music and Laura learn more about your work?
I have a website. It's kalidasari.com. And all of, well, my music so far is all up on all of the major service providers. And I'm also on social media too, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. And I've also got a few silly skits and songs and stuff like that on YouTube as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of me out there.
Thank you so much for joining us at Brainwaves, Kalida. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on and learn from you and, open up more of an opportunity. It's always good to have an opportunity to talk about, things like fibromyalgia, which aren't really that discussed or understood, by the public and medical professionals, as you've mentioned.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. It was fantastic.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.